training camp, the first training camp edition of the Believe in Titans podcast, your weekly look at all things Tennessee Titans with John Glennon of All Titans at SI.com. John, how are you?
I am doing well and enjoying being back in the flow once again.
Yes, indeed. I am David Beauclair, also of All Titans at SI.com. You can find our work daily at SI.com/NFL/Titans. Denard Walker, the third but certainly not the least member of the crew, is on vacation this week. So John and I will press forward without him. But plenty to discuss, John. We're recording this Wednesday evening. There has been one training camp practice, and it was notable, I think, on several fronts, not the least of which was that we saw Treylon Burks on the field, involved from start to finish, and making plays. Talk about Treylon Burks and how good a day this was for him in contrast to most of the rest of his offseason.
How about that? How about that for a big change in just about 5 or 6 weeks? You know, when we last saw Treylon Burks, he was on the sidelines and he was riding an exercise bike through all of minicamp, which is not an ideal spot to be in for any player, let alone a first-round draft pick who's going to be expected to produce a lot in the absence of A.J. Brown. So, you know, the clear good news is that not only was Treylon Burks out there, not only was Treylon Burks, you know, carrying the full load that all of his teammates were, but that he made impressions out there. And it started very early in the 7-on-7 drills. I think, you know, maybe the second rep they had in 7-on-7 drills when he got behind Christian Fulton. Ryan Tannehill throws a long pass his way. He makes an excellent diving catch deep down the sideline. And you went, whoa. Maybe things have changed quite a bit. And there were other catches as well in this first day of training camp that really made you say, wow, this is what we were missing. This is why they drafted Treylon Burks. And again, this is one day of training camp. We can't get too far ahead of ourselves. But, you know, what I always was saying about Treylon Burks' condition in the offseason was, you know, the fact that he was not out there, it was a story until it was not a story. Well, today was the first step towards the other story. You know, the first step in this is what Treylon Burks can do on a football field, as opposed to why isn't Treylon Burks on the football field?
Yeah, and you know, the diving catch is one of those things that a lot of times, I think 98% of the time, coaches will say, you know, I'm not sure I want a guy doing that in that situation. It's 7-on-7. You know, the important thing is to run the route, the you know, to understand, you know, what you're doing there, to have the quarterback see you and that sort of thing. But, you know, because when you dive like that, it's one of those, it increases the possibility of injury. And, but I think in this case, that was a really important moment because it showed that not only is Treylon Burks out there and working, Treylon Burks is competing and trying to make a statement to his teammates that, hey, I'm going to do everything I can do to catch every ball and whatnot. So I think in that case, it was probably one where a lot of coaches where they normally would wince probably smiled a little bit. And to your point of it's a story until it's not a story, I think Treylon Burks after practice was just as good as he was during practice, where for the first time he owned up to the fact that he was out of shape. He owned up to the issues with his asthma. He didn't kind of shy away from the questions. He answered them matter of factly. This was a textbook example of how you handle these sorts of things. And maybe it's very much a product of the fact that he does feel better after 5 or 6 weeks of just conditioning, that he felt confident after a good practice. And by all accounts, a couple of good days of practices, of course, you know, quarterbacks and rookies and a couple others had reported on Saturday. And, And John Robinson and Mike Vrabel said on Tuesday they talked about how much better Treylon Burks had looked. So this was a really good day for him on a lot of fronts. I agree with you also, though, that it is one day. I've chuckled a little bit watching the social media response. Like the Titans have tweeted out from their account the video of the diving catch, and every, you know, there's a lot of people out there now who are ready to declare Treylon Burks is a 1,500 yard receiver this year and whatnot. It's, there's a long way to go, but a good first day and I would say a chance for everybody to exhale on the Treylon Burks front right now. And we can all start to look at him the way you typically would a first round pick and start to evaluate him that way.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think what's also important, too, is that what's important about getting Treylon Burks back out on the field also is an obvious point that all of a sudden now he's building that relationship with Ryan Tannehill that he was not able to do during the offseason, which is vital, between a quarterback and a wide receiver. And Ryan Tannehill addressed that as well after the session today. He said, yeah, when I see you making plays like that, when I see you down the field making diving catches, when I see you coming back to the football, going up in the air and catching passes, I'm more likely to trust you in those kind of situations moving forward. I'm more likely to throw you the ball more regularly. So I think that's an important step there as well. And maybe one last point for me in regards to Treylon Burks is I thought back to, the first press conference that the Titans had with Treylon Burks, and they talked, Mike Vrabel and John Robinson kind of talked about the first time they met him. And I can't remember whether that was at the combine. I think it was at the combine, and it didn't go particularly well is basically what they said. I guess Treylon Burks had gotten in there, fairly recently, wasn't adjusted real well. And so, the impression wasn't necessarily great, but the second time that they talked to him, things went much smoother. They got a much more, much better understanding of who Treylon Burks was. And really this is sort of the same thing, on a different level here. The first impression everybody got from Treylon Burks, whether it was during the offseason or, as you mentioned, speaking to the media afterwards, was not a good one. But today, both accounts on the field, excellent. And when he spoke to us afterwards in terms of taking accountability, addressing what was going on with him before, totally different impression I had of Treylon Burks today than I did the last time we saw him.
Yeah, I think he's just that kind of guy, right? Like he's never going to have an eye popping 40-yard dash time. People are going to look at that and say, well, he's not fast, and he wasn't the fastest guy at Arkansas, but he's one of those guys. It's not hard to find film of him running downfield and guys not catching him, right? So that if there is such a thing as a gamer, and coaches don't like that term, they want guys who are consistent every day in practice and working hard. And certainly Mike Vrabel likes to talk about the process and stacking days on top of one another. But Treylon Burks might be that guy who is. Just a football player, and when the time comes to play ball, all the other stuff falls aside, and we'll see what happens. It's interesting. You talk about the long catch on the second play of 7-on-7. The first play of that 7-on-7 period was a long completion as well. Ryan Tannehill to Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, and I immediately flashed back to last year, because I think it was the first 7-on-7 period last year. I know it was very early in the first training camp practice. Ryan Tannehill threw a really bad interception where you kind of went, what was he doing there? And I think he ended up with two or three interceptions by the end of the first day of camp. The interceptions continued throughout camp. They continued into the regular season. They certainly continued into the playoff game. It was kind of a thing he never got away from. So to start today, Ryan Tannehill, right, there's not question about him. We know who he is as a player. We know who he is as a person. But I thought this was a really good day for him as well, just in that it was a stark contrast from how he started training camp last year.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. And I noticed Jimmy Wyatt was tracking his throws today, and probably we'll all be doing that by the end of camp. And Jim had him as 11 for 11 in both the 7-on-7 sessions and the team sessions combined. And you can't obviously do much better than 11 on 11. But, you know, one thing I thought that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel both noted yesterday, and I've seen from time to time during the off season as well, is that we seem to be, you know, seeing a little bit more of a vocal Ryan Tannehill, not like a screaming on the field type vocal, but talking to his receivers. You see him a number of times going up to receivers, especially obviously the young ones, and telling them, you know, you can see the motion, saying, hey, I wish you would maybe gone a little bit more in this direction, or you know, maybe the timing should have been a little bit more this. You know, and I think that's something a little bit different what we're seeing from Ryan Tannehill. And I have to guess maybe that there are probably at least two reasons for that. One is obviously that he has so many new faces to throw to this year that he is really going to have to work on chemistry and communication more so than he probably did last year when you know, more receivers were coming back and he had more familiarity with them. Another reason is that, you know, there's certainly a school of thought out there that this may be Ryan Tannehill's last season as a Titans starting quarterback if things don't go particularly well. You know, obviously Malik Willis is a third-round pick waiting in the wings. Obviously Ryan Tannehill's contract is easier to get out of next year. So I kind of figured, too, that there's a little bit more urgency for Ryan Tannehill to do everything he can to kind of, you know, if this is going to be my last year, I'm going to go out swinging. I'm going to make sure I know what these receivers are, that they know what I want, you know, in the patterns that, you know, I'm not going to be misunderstood. That's not going to be the reason why I fail. So I think Ryan Tannehill, he's impressed me. The three words I noticed that John Robinson used about him the other day were he liked his juice, his energy, and his leadership. And it's been a good vibe, I think, that Ryan Tannehill has had really this entire offseason, ever since he talked about leaving the dark place after the playoff loss to Cincinnati.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, he's not getting any younger, right? He turned 34 right today on the first day of camp. And, you know, for a guy, any guy not named Tom Brady, that's, you know, that's getting up there in years. And I wonder, I have to wonder, to your point, too, about the working with the wide receivers and all of that and talking about building trust. The way, you know, there's two things I think of that every time I hear him right now talk about building trust with wide receivers and the things that they can do to earn his trust. I remember back in 2019, a week or two after he became the starter, I asked him if he was a guy who liked to have sort of a number one, you know, like a favorite receiver, like his guy he knew he could trust no matter what, or how he approached that sort of thing. And he gave me the, you know, I go where the defense tells me to go. Whoever's open is going to get the ball, that sort of thing. And over the next 2.5 years, he proved to, you know, that was not true, right? I mean, he loved having AJ Brown as a number one guy. And I think he's very much on the lookout right now to figure out who can be that guy. Is it going to be Robert Woods? Is it going to be Treylon Burks? Is he going to have to settle for, you know, Austin Hooper, the tight end, and some shorter throws in key situations, that sort of thing. And the other thing I think about, and before people get too excited, like, coaches will never, ever, ever say this publicly, but there are days in training camp and occasionally during the regular season, if they feel like they need it, but certainly there are days in training camp that are scripted to favor one side of the ball over the other. You know, there will be a day in training camp, for example, when the defense suddenly rolls out 17 different blitzes, and the quarterback is going to end up eating the ball on about 12 of them. And we're all going to be talking about what a terrible day it was for the offense. Well, when that happens, that's by design. And I can't help but wonder, given how good the defense was last year, given all the continuity on that unit, how everybody pretty much knows what they're doing, and given that there is so much uncertainty with the wide receiver group in particular, if today was not scripted to be an offense-friendly day and to give everybody on that side of the ball a little chance to feel good. Ryan Tannehill talked about it afterwards. He said, Todd Downing and I talked about it beforehand. It would be nice to have some opportunities to take a couple shots deep early in practice. Well, what happens? Like, as we said, the first two plays of 7-on-7, they got a guy running deep against a low safety look and whatnot. So I wonder if that's not one of those little subtle coaching moves that is designed to pay dividends down the road for a unit that is very much looking for its identity and its playmakers right now.
Interesting conspiracy theory, David Beauclair. Very interesting. Yes. And if that is the case, the offense needs to give a pat on the back to Christian Fulton, who was the primary culprit, of course, on both of those two reps back to back, got beat by Nick Westbrook-Ikhina deep. And then, you figure that's in the back of his mind, and he's probably saying, I'm not going to let that happen again. Well, the next play, it sure as heck happened again, and that's when Treylon Burks got behind him. Kevin Byard said after practice that, clearly that's not vintage Christian Fulton, and that's a good learning spot for him in that kind of situation. But you're right. The offense for an offense featuring so many new wide receivers, so many new names against an accomplished group, the offense certainly did look sharp today.
Yeah, and I think we have to point out, because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, this is the time of year when contract extensions typically are given. No contract announcements today, at least. Maybe it comes tomorrow, but specifically for Jeffrey Simmons. But Jeffrey Simmons did practice, did not want to talk about his contract. Mike Vrabel said on Tuesday, Jeffrey Simmons is going to be one of those guys who's not going to be involved every single day. He's going to be on a different, he's going to be on a different sort of training camp plan because he's earned that through his production, through the way he plays the game, the way he works in the training room. Do you feel a better sense of clarity about the Jeffrey Simmons situation right now that, the extension's just not going to happen, or do you think there's still a possibility there?
Well, certainly, I think that the Titans have the leverage in that situation right now, in that, he has one more year of his rookie contract, and they've already picked up year five of that contract as well. And, regularly done that the Titans or really any other team offer up an extension with two more years, basically, still remaining. It'd be tough for Jeffrey Simmons. All of a sudden you start getting hit with the big fines if you're not showing up at training camp. The only issue to me is, and when Jeffrey Simmons talked immediately after practice today, the first thing that he said in response to a kind of a foolishly worded screamed question at him, Jeffrey, what do you think of your contract? Immediately Jeffrey Simmons said, I'm not here to talk about the contract. I'm here to play football. So that kind of limited any kind of clarity we might get. But at the same time, you certainly didn't get a feel that he was happy about the situation either. And the only question I have is, if there's no extension and if Jeffrey Simmons starts to get under his skin, he is obviously a huge piece of your team, a huge piece of your defense, and a huge part of your locker room too, a big time leader. And if a guy like that is getting more and more ticked off as the days go by and there is no contract extension, does that kind of have a ripple effect in the locker room? Do people, do teammates start saying, geez, they're not treating Jeffrey Simmons right? He's clearly outplayed, his rookie contract. He's not making the kind of money he needs to be. The Titans should be stepping up for him. You know, does that create a little bit of a bad vibe, ill will in the locker room? And it's far too early to say that, but that's kind of my one question at this point.
Yeah, and John Robinson was asked, philosophically speaking, on Tuesday, would you do a contract for a guy who has 2 years remaining? And John Robinson, too, we don't talk about contracts. We're, you know, and I'm not even going to talk about how we would feel about that. So the mystery, I guess, remains for now. No doubt how good and Jeffrey Simmons is and how important he is to this team. You would think they want to make him happy.
Deservedly, exactly.
Three guys didn't make the cut, so to speak, from a health standpoint: linebacker Monty Rice, tight end Tommy Hudson, rookie kicker Caleb Shudak. What are the Titans missing, you think, with one or any of those guys in particular right now until they get healthy?
Yeah, you know, I think clearly the one who's likely to have the most significant impact this year was Monty Rice. You know, he certainly showed some ability to produce when given the opportunity last year. I know you wrote a good story on him a few weeks ago and detailed just how productive he was, when he was in the games. And it's a position that is maybe not the deepest in the world for the Titans, inside linebacker. You know, behind Rice, you've got Joe Jones, Dylan Cole, guys who haven't necessarily proven themselves.
Chance Campbell,
the rookie, as well. So that's a bit of a concern that the Achilles, he hasn't been able to overcome the Achilles yet. I'm also, I kind of would have liked to have seen Caleb Shudak. And you know, you're saying, okay, what's an undrafted free agent kicker? What's the big deal? But you know, this guy had a pretty impressive year last year at Iowa. And the one thing he does have, despite his diminutive size, is a pretty powerful leg. Really impressive work from 40 to 49 yards and over 50 as well. And if you want to, take a shot or two at Randy Bullock and what he did, sure. He was consistent for the most part. He had three game winning kicks, but there were certainly some questions about the leg. He missed, I think, five between 40 to 49 yards. And I think it's always healthy anyway to have at least some competition out there. So I think he is missed right now in that respect. John Robinson did seem to indicate that maybe he won't be out too long. He didn't sound like he was on the verge of adding another kicker for competition. So, and then when you look at Tommy Hudson, well, poor guy can't seem to get healthy, a tough situation for him, because he is a guy that seems to kind of fit that Titan tight end mold that they like. And he's earned praise, but just can't seem to stay healthy. But, in terms of health, I think what's great, is seeing Caleb Farley running around out there and Robert Woods running around there, and we're not seeing knee braces, and I don't think they're quite full go yet, but certainly encouraging steps for both of them.
Yeah, it was one of the more interesting things I think Mike Vrabel said on Tuesday when asked about Farley and Woods, and he said they're both doing about 90% of the work that we're doing right now as a team, but when they're not involved, the two of them, it works out nicely. The two of them go off on the side and they do, they do get off drills or, mirroring drills. They're able to work against one another. So they're able to make the most of that time. And I spoke to Caleb Farley briefly after practice today, and different sort of attitude from him than I experienced all last season. Last season, there was sort of this manic energy about him, where, you know, he was in such a hurry to be good and to play like a first round pick and all that. And he seems to be in a much more calm, much more sort of serious place right now that I interpreted it as a guy again who feels much more settled, much more confident, has a much clearer picture of sort of what is expected of him and what he's capable to deliver this year. So and while we're talking about Caleb Farley, let's mention this. Mike Vrabel named his offseason MVPs today, which is always sort of an interesting thing. These guys get preferred parking spots and I guess a couple other like little perks within the building, but there were six this year, which by my recollection was a big number. It's Dylan Radins
Carter, Des Fitzpatrick.
Dylan Radins, Des Fitzpatrick, Torrey Carter on offense. That's right. Caleb Farley, DeMarcus Walker, Amani Hooker on defense. If you're keeping score, that's Caleb Farley, first round pick in 2021, Dylan Radins, second round pick in 2021, and Des Fitzpatrick, the first of two fourth round picks in 2021. The 2021 draft pick collectively did not deliver what was hoped, or did not deliver, I guess, relatively speaking, much as a group during their rookie season. Mike Vrabel said part of the criteria for these awards was improvement. This sounds like it's a really good sign for that class and what can be expected of them. There was eight guys in all in that class. Seven of them are still with the team, and three of them get singled out as offseason MVPs. That, I mean, that's got to be a good sign, right?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And, you know, when you look at the last two drafts of the Titans, you know, certainly they haven't had the bang of the 2019 draft, which is one of the all timers for this franchise. But I think there's an important differentiation also between the 2020 and the 2021. 2020, you can virtually kiss it goodbye right now. There's not, you know, you're just not going to get much out of that class. You know, most of the players in that class are either gone, or it's pretty clear, you know, they're not going to contribute. But 2021, you know, I think you still had so many question marks. You know, there were guys that didn't necessarily make a bang right away, but you still couldn't say they're a bust, or you still couldn't say, you know, what were they thinking? You know, there was still potential upside. And I think those guys that you mentioned, Des Fitzpatrick, Dylan Radins, and so forth, I think they fit that mold. And also, you know, when you look at a guy like a Rashad Weaver, you know, barely played last year, another guy from that draft class. And so he's another guy that's a question mark, where you're saying, okay, we don't have enough of a sample size yet to really judge him. But Des Fitzpatrick is a guy, you know, we've heard Mike Vrabel pump him up a few times in terms of how he's increased in terms of maturity. And I thought he had some interesting comments today about Des Fitzpatrick, about playing on the practice squad last year and how that benefited him, just simply because you're getting so many passes thrown to you. You're having so many targets on the practice squad, the kind that you would not be getting. You'd be getting very limited reps if you were on the NFL roster. So that he thinks that has helped Des Fitzpatrick. And certainly that is a position, you know, those lower rung positions on the wide receiver depth chart, those are wide open. They're looking for someone like Des Fitzpatrick to come in there. Dylan Radins, the same kind of situation. You know, they certainly need a guy to step up and fill that right tackle role. The fact that he's winning that award is impressive. You know, while I'm on Dylan Radins too, you know, I want to point out or address kind of one storyline that sort of I've heard it come up a few times, and I don't think there's much to it, really. A lot of people asking that question, like, shouldn't Dylan Radins, you know, be pounding his chest and saying, I should be the right tackle. I am the guy at right tackle. And frankly, I think that's a little silly. Every guy has a different type of personality. Some guys are going to be the kind of people that, you know, pound their chest and say, yes, I'm the man. I've got to have that spot. some guys hold that inside and you know, compete, you know, in a quieter fashion. We've seen plenty of guys who are quieter, who have excelled over the years, you know. So that's one thing that was kind of gnawing at a little bit at me over Dylan Radins. But side tangent. Anyway,
well, that's all right. That's why we're here. We're here for it. We're here to help, John.
That's and, right. That's you, right. I need to get that off my chest.
Get it off the chest. I thought DeMarcus Walker was an interesting inclusion on this list too, because he was a guy who was added later in the offseason. You know, he was not a guy they signed in January or even in March. He was added later in the season. And so that, you know, you think, okay, this guy must have really made an impression then in the time he's been here. But I will say, 2 years ago, one of the offseason MVPs was wide receiver / return man Rashard Davis, who was in a really, you know, going into training camp, you knew it was going to be a really interesting competition with Khalif Raymond and Cameron Batson for sort of one of the depth spots at wide receiver and key return men. They were all similarly built, all same kind of player. And Rashard Davis gets named an offseason MVP. So you're thinking, wow, you know, this guy's got the inside track now. Well, Rashard Davis got cut at the end of the preseason, and Batson and Raymond both played for the Titans that year. Davis hadn't been heard from since. So there is, you know, this is, there's no guarantee with these offseason MVP awards, but
it does get you a nice parking pass.
It does get you a nice parking pass for training camp when there's 90 plus guys vying for positions close to the door. That'll do it for today. That, as we say, that's one practice in the books. Next week we'll have a whole week's worth to talk about, and going forward we are off and running now. It's that time. I know you're ready to see how this season pans out. I'm ready to see it. So we hope all you out there will come along with us, and we will sort this thing out. But until next week, John, have a good week of practices and work and writing.
Thank you, Dave. You do the same.
I will do it. This is the Believe in Titans podcast.